Genesis, where we saw Jacob beginning to be fruitful and to multiply. We see with Rachel and Leah, also their handmaids included in this as well, and the sons to Jacob being born that will become the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, let's see. There's one that hasn't been born yet. Do you know which one that is?
Benjamin.
That's right. Benjamin is yet to be born, but he will be coming eventually. Next, though, the record turns to Jacob desiring to return back to his homeland. And it's not without motivation. God's actually behind this. And you'll see there in Genesis chapter 31, Genesis chapter 31, where it says in verse 1, "Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, 'Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth.' And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable towards him as before." And so he could see, you know, times have changed. The sweetness has kind of passed. And he says, you know, when I walk by Laban or he walks by me, we look at one another, you know, things have changed, right? Maybe you've seen that before, you know, countenance of an individual. It's no longer favorable anymore towards you. Well, that's how Jacob felt. And verse 3, it says, "Then the Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you.'" So God has now given him direction. It's time to go back home. It's time to return back to your family. Now, of course, it's going to be met with a lot of mixed emotions, right? Does anyone know right now how long it's been since Jacob has been back home? Yes. That's right. That's right. So 20 years. It's been 20 years. That's two decades. Long time. And so he's got to make preparations for this. The only problem is that he fears Laban, right? Laban hasn't been the fairest to him. In fact, he says that he changed his wage 10 times. And he was afraid that he would take his daughters and Jacob's children away as well. And so he thinks the best thing to do is just to kind of go by secret. So again, we see here in verse 11, it says, "Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, 'Jacob,' and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Lift your eyes now and see all the rams which leapt upon the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now rise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family.'" So God remembers him, reminds him of that great vision that he saw in Bethel and the great commitment and covenant promise he made to Jacob there at Bethel. And so, you know, even though it was 20 years ago, to God, it was as if nothing, right? And so he reminds him that "I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar." So he's saying, this is by my authority, by my will. I want you to go and to return. You'll see there, verse 17, "Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan." And so he's going to go back home. He's going to go and see his father once again. And we know that that means he's also going to see his brother Esau as well. All right, any comments so far? All right, so he begins his journey. He waits till his father-in-law is shearing sheep. That's 3 days travel away, and so he's got a 3-day head start. He starts to go. Of course, he's going to travel a lot slower than his father-in-law would because he's going with family. He's going with all of his livestock, all of his servants. All of that is going with him. So eventually, Laban does catch up to him, and he meets up with him. And you'll see in chapter 31, when he catches up with him, he says in verse 41, "Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock, and you've changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." So he's talking about a dream that he had, and so that's what had taken place. But here he says that God has been with him. "You have not been the fairest of persons with me, and I do not trust you as far as I could have thrown you." And so that's why we had to go in the dark of night, in essence. We had to go in secret. I think it's interesting he calls him the God of his father Abraham and the fear of Isaac, right? The fear being used as kind of a synonym or a euphemism for God, right? If we should have one fear in life, it should be that of God. The fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. And the proverb writer also says the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And it's when people stop fearing God that they go their own way, their own course, right? They lose an anchor for their soul. And we certainly see that in our society. We see it sometimes, sadly, in the church, sometimes as well. And it's why people go astray. They stop fearing God as Abraham and Isaac did. All right, any questions, comments so far here? Okay. So, what do we see next? Well, chapter 32, they start to make their way back. He's concerned about Esau, and he divides up the camp. And he sends ahead of him gifts to appease Esau's wrath because he does hear that Esau's on his way. He assumes he is filled with fury because 20 years ago, he remembers that's how he left him. But he will be pleasantly surprised. But here in chapter 32, we see something very interesting. If I can get someone to read verses 22 through 32. Yeah, thank you.
"And he arose at night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, 'Let me go, for the day breaks.' And he said, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' So he said to him, 'What is your name?' He said, 'Jacob.' And he said, 'Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with the men and have prevailed.' Then Jacob asked, saying, 'Tell me your name, I pray.' And he said, 'Why is it that you ask about my name?' And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place, 'Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved.' Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip and the muscle that shrank."
Thank you, Liz. All right, so here you see Jacob sends the family on ahead to cross or to ford the river Jabbok, and he's by himself. evidently some alone time to commune with God. I might just mention in passing, do you ever find yourself in those times where you just kind of break away from the busyness of life, society, family, and close the door and spend some alone time with God? And it's certainly something that we should all seek to do.
More often than I know I do.
Yeah. Yep. Being at home by yourself, you know, that will give you some of that time. Individuals that have families or occupations, you know, it can be a little more difficult, but we need to find the time. All right. Jacob here had a lot of responsibilities, and he found the time. Now, in that time, he discovers a man, right? And they begin to lock and to wrestle. He obviously knows this is something significant. You know, this is not just an ordinary robbery. This is divine. And it says there, verse 24, Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him. And then yet in verse 28, it says that your name shall be no longer called Jacob, but Israel, for you've struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. So he even says in verse 30, I've seen God face to face and my life is preserved. So this sometimes causes some individuals to struggle as to what exactly took place. And this is an example of where we're able to try and understand that sometimes when the Bible references and God spoke to a certain person or God met someone, that it wasn't speaking about God literally, but a representation of God. Hosea 12 verse 4 says that Jacob wrestled with an angel. And so here was a representative of God, but in a sense, in a figure of speech, he said, I've wrestled with God. And so we have to understand that no man has seen God at any time. We cannot see him in his full glorious form in this existence. But we see that man has seen representatives sent by God. And in that sense, it was as if they had struggled with God. There's another example of that with Moses and the burning bush, where it says that God spoke to Moses through the bush, and yet then later on it says the angel said. So again, God uses these representatives, and it's as if God was doing it or saying it. And so those are some examples of that. But this was a mighty struggle, and he won't let go. If any have ever done any fighting on grappling or, you know, any kind of taekwondo, karate, point scoring, it is extremely exhausting. And there's a reason why they make rounds like 2 minutes long. You will burn through your adrenaline like that. I mean, it just zaps you completely. And so here they are going at it all night long. No doubt in my mind, Jacob's CNS, his central nervous system, would have been fried, but yet he would not let go. And it just shows his determination to see something through to the end. And we see that God blesses him. He says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. So what was the blessing? Yes. Oh, okay. Well, that was something he was going to do, yes. But in this point, what does he do? I won't let you go until you bless me. Charlotte?
Changed his name.
There you go. That's right. His name from Jacob to
Israel.
And there we get the name for the Israelites, right? The children of Israel. So again, we're trying to see the big picture here, right? Where did the name Israel come from? Now you know, right? It came from this moment here, where we struggled with God and man and prevailed. Judy?
Another quick thing is a lesson for us is when you go and you kept going, you're going, I'm good for you. In the previous chapter, everything's going to be good, but maybe this moment Jacob may not have thought everything. He teaches us endurance.
That's right. Yep. And that life is a lot like that, right? You're going to hang on tight to the very end, right? Yes, Liz.
I was thinking of that note here, too, where Jacob is, Jacob meant deceiver.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, Israel meaning prince with God. So it is interesting how, you know, God gives people, you know, their names had such meaning.
Absolutely. Yes, that's right. There's this transition. He's going back to that. Well, as we saw on the map there, that going back to Canaan land, the land that's promised to him, and in essence, he's saying that you're now turning a page in your life, right? Formerly deceiver, right? He did that to his brother a couple of times, and now you're going to be a prince, right? And so, quite a difference, and signified by the name change. Nancy.
The Israelites are the descendants of Abraham, and God has chosen them. And there was these other people that are not his descendants that are like what we call today the Gentiles. So that's where there are other people besides just Abraham and his descendants. And God chose them. Now you correct me if I'm wrong, Matthew, but God chose them. If they're supposed to live his law, yeah. So that other countries will learn about God. And yeah. The same thing applies today with Christians. You know, Christians and Gentiles. If we Christians are supposed to make other countries and other people know about God.
Right.
There's a parallel.
Absolutely, yeah.
And somehow for years I've just got Abraham's people
were,
that was all the people there were, but there wasn't, there were the other people that were not his descendants that are looking for all my Gentiles.
Yeah.
I'm trying to correct things with other people because of my ignorance.
Right. I mean, because we do know there was like people like Melchizedek and others that still had some connection to God, but he was showing, like you said, to the nations what it was like to live within his commandments given to a special people. And there is parallels because now we're not fleshly Israel, but a spiritual Israel. And these are the ones that walk with God now. Yes. Good. Yes.
Didn't Laban even say, keep my daughters in the previous chapters I was reading? Did I understand that correctly?
Say again.
He kept, keep my daughters. He Laban let him take her. If you keep them in with the group, don't let them out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure what you're saying. He did leave with his daughters.
Make peace with Laban.
Yes, there was peace made, for sure.
He promised to take care of the daughters and wives.
Yes.
Keep them secure in the group, in the traveling group, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it was good that they were able to kind of leave on decent terms in the end.
Promise was it, so that's what kept more Israelites, keep them in the Israelite family.
Right, yes, okay, and then we're going to see there's some troubles with that, and that's what sends them to Egypt. Yep. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Okay. So, we saw that wrestling there. Now, eventually, he does meet up with Esau in chapter 33. How does that go, anybody? It went really well. Yeah. So 2 decades worth of time had passed. Esau no longer held the grudge. And so that was a blessing for sure. And it relieved the heart of Jacob. And again, it should be a good example to us as well. Never does anyone any good or any benefit to hold a bitter grudge in your heart. So chapter 35 is where Jacob returns back to Bethel. Remember, God had said, you return back to this place and you'll offer an offering to me once again. And so that is fulfilled. That takes place. You'll look there in chapter 35, verse 7. It says, and he built an altar there and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared to him when he fled from the face of his brother. And so there the covenant in essence is going to be reminded, in not renewed, but just reminded. There, verse 10, God said to him, "Your name is Jacob. Your name shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name." So he called his name Israel. And God said to him, "I am God Almighty. Be fruitful, multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall proceed from you, and kings shall come from your body. The land which I gave Abraham and Isaac I give to you, and to your descendants after you I give this land." And so, yes.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand this. So Jacob, his name was changed to Israel.
Correct.
So for the rest of the Bible, is Jacob still mentioned throughout the Bible?
Yes.
So why is that?
Because I think it's just a way to identify the same person. But as you just read there, he says, "You're no longer be called Jacob." And yet we do see sometimes when it's referring to him later on, Jacob passing. But it is, as Liz said, like a very symbolic measure that now he has this name, which is kind of elevated in its meaning from the previous name. It's kind of, Jesus does that with Peter, right? And he does that with Abraham as well, Abram to Abraham. And so it's not that their names could never be referred to the way it was before, but it's just showing that there's now this significant tie to this person. In a lot of ways, he's taking the torch, right? It was Abraham, it was Isaac, and now it's going to be you, Jacob, Israel. And that's what you see in the same chapter, in chapter 35, the death of Isaac. So firmly passing the torch, chapter 35, verse 27. I think this is nice that Jacob was able to see his father again. It says, "Then Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre," or Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, "where Abraham and Isaac had dwelt. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years. So Isaac breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, being old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him." So they hadn't seen each other for about 20 years, but then they were able to be reunited, see each other again. How long they were together before he passed, I'm not certain about that. But there you get the idea. It is going to be now following the story of Jacob and his sons, right? Just as we followed the other previous stories of those other important families. Yes, Charlotte. Israel what? Oh, yes. Let me get it back up here. Yep. This one. Right. Yep, the name of the territory, the name of the country, yep. Still called that today, isn't it? Yeah. It's in the news right now, right? It's pretty amazing when you think about it. And then amazing to think that, again, there's still a clash in some ways between the descendants of Ishmael and the descendants of Isaac, right? The Arabs and the Jews. Even though they're basically Jews by name, not necessarily by descent. Okay, let's see. What else we got here? Yes. So in chapter 35, this is where we see the death of Rachel. And remember, Rachel was Jacob's, we might say, main love, right? He was the one that fell in love with her first when he came to Laban's house. And here's where we read of the 12th son being born. Let's see. Can I get someone to read verses 16 through 22? Thank you, Jonathan.
They set out from Bethel when they were still some distance from Ephrath. Rachel began to give birth, and her labor was difficult. During her difficult labor, the midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for you have another son." With her last breath, before she was dying, she named him Ben-Oni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Jacob set up a marker on her grave. It was the marker at Rachel's grave still today.
All right. So there we see she dies in giving birth to Benjamin. So definitely a very sad occasion, not completely uncommon in those days. And that's one reason why Jacob will treasure Benjamin so much in the coming narrative, because it's one of his last memories of his wife. He clings to him. So Rachel would die, and Benjamin is born. Now, chapter 36, I'm just going to mention this real quick. Chapter 36, verse 1, it says, now this is the genealogy of Esau, who is Edom, okay? So the Bible is obviously not going to focus on Esau. He's not part of the chosen family that we're following. But it does mention these little details so that we understand where some of these nations do come from that are certainly alive and well during the time of Moses. And you see on this chart here, eventually the Edomites come from Esau in the land of Edom. The Moabites, the Ammonites, they're going to come from the descendants of Lot. And you notice how there's kind of this like barrier before you get into the promised land. And so when the Israelites are trying to get into the promised land, they meet a lot of resistance from these people. Now, their forefather, right, Lot, was friendly with Abraham, and Abraham loved Lot. Esau, at the end, loved Jacob, and Jacob loved Esau. But their descendants carried a lot of bad blood with the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the years to come. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out. There's a reason why the Bible does mention these names, so that you understand there's these connections that play a role later on in the wilderness wanderings and then conquering the land of Canaan. Any comments or questions about that? Okay, so with Rachel dying and Benjamin being born, the narrative now picks up its focus towards the next person of interest, we might say, to carry the story forward. And that is of Joseph. So, Joseph, we're going to read, eventually is taken to Egypt, and so too will all the family as well. So here you see Bethel up there. That's where Jacob had been. And eventually they're going to have to travel to Egypt in order to survive the difficulties. But let's start at the beginning of the story. Let's read Genesis 37, verses 1 through 11. If I can get a reader for that, please. Thank you, Denise.
Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was, a stranger in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brother, and the land was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph got a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaf stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you have indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, look, I have dreamed another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me. So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him, but his father took the matter in mind.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Denise. All right. So the narrative starts with Joseph. How old is Joseph? All right. He's a teenager, right? Young guy.
And they know so much.
Oh, yes. And there's the youthful pride that certainly comes to the surface here. But we see a few things here. Okay, first off, is there a little family dynamic that's a little off?
Definitely.
Okay. Dad plays favorites. That's right. And everybody knew about it, didn't they?
There was no doubt.
Yes. So we see, you know, significant danger in doing that. I mean, this is what ultimately leads Joseph into dire straits and into captivity, and, you know, being in prison and all of this. Now, God knows how to turn a bad into his good, right? And Joseph will learn some lessons from all of that. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, Joseph has some dreams, right? Two separate dreams. Is the message the same or different?
Well, the message is the same, but it's the items are different.
Yeah, the details are different, but the message is the same. That's right. What is the essence of the message?
That they will bow down to him.
Okay.
His family will kind of, in a way, worship him a little bit.
Pay homage to him, right? That's right. They'll bow to him. And that does not sit well with, especially the brothers, and then certainly the father. He thinks this is puzzling. But
being one of the younger,
yes,
it's also, yeah, like,
correct. Correct. That's not the way it normally works, right? But it does say that his father keeps it in mind, because he was a younger one as well, wasn't he? So he knows that God does work in ways that man doesn't work. His thoughts are not our thoughts. His ways are not our ways, saith the Lord. So he's thinking about this, though he definitely rebukes Joseph, because I'm sure that there is, like I said, a little bit of youthful pride in being so willing to so freely share all of this with everybody. All right. So let's now read verses 12 through 24. If I can have a reader, 12 through 24. Tim, thank you.
Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are you not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said to him, Here I am. Then he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brother and well with the flock, and bring back word to me. So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he sent the sheep. Now a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? So he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks. And the man said, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beasts have devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him in this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring them back to his father. Did
you say to 24.
So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into the pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it.
All right, so Joseph's been sent to send word to his brothers to take care of them and see to their needs, and he seeks to find them, and while he's on the way there, they conspire to kill him. I mean, this is some deep-seated hatred, right? But not, again, without bounds of understanding. We saw Cain does that to Abel, right? I mean, sometimes the family strife can be stronger than regular strife because of these familial ties. And we see that here. But Reuben, he's the firstborn, and he speaks up, no, let's not do that, right? Let's not do that. Let's just put him in a pit, you know, and decide what to do there. His intent is to try and, you know, deliver him, right? So he's the wisest of the bunch. He's hoping to, you know, time might get them to reconsider this and to not do what they plan to do. And so they're going to sit down, eat a meal, and talk this through. So let's read next 25. I'll read from here. Verse 25. And they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on the way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by, and so the brothers pulled Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. Now notice verse 29, then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more, and I, where shall I go? So he realized that, you know, a lot of this responsibility falls on the shoulders of the oldest brother. And so he's worried about what his dad's going to say. They concoct this plan, right? Take the tunic, let's dip it in some blood and say a lion killed him. That's what we're going to do. They're going to be lying about the lion, right? That's what's going to happen. And but it's interesting, just mention in side note, that these are Ishmaelites, right? So I would assume to be descendants of Ishmael, right? They're already wandering around and doing trading and doing business, and they buy Joseph for 20 shekels of silver. Any questions, comments? Yes, Nancy?
In verse 28, it says, then the Midianite traders, then later it says they sold to the Ishmaelites.
Correct.
So are Ishmaelites and the Midianites the same?
That's what I would understand, right, yes. Mm-hmm. One described more the territory, the other described more the descendant. Mm-hmm. Good. Anybody else?
I did like that it calls out specifically that the pit was dry.
Yeah. Little details like that, right? It just reminds you this is a real story.
Like, they didn't throw him in a well.
Yeah.
They just threw him in a deep hole.
Deep hole, or he couldn't go get out. No, it was just, the point was that it was just a detail that God is just sharing, that it was a barren pit, you know, he couldn't get out. Yes?
I was just going to say, going back to the verse 11, in 37:11, when it says his brethren envied him, but his father observed the same, I was thinking about the parallel that the chief priest out of envy delivered Jesus to the Roman soldiers. And eventually ended up in his crucifixion.
Yeah.
And just in order to understand the rest of this story, it's important to know how much they hated his brother, like, to the point of wanting to kill him.
Yeah.
And would have, if that a plan from Reuben hadn't been established. But later on, we'll find out how much they repented about all that.
Correct. That's right.
It's pretty deep.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, like Joseph said, there's this family dynamic that was not healthy that created an environment like this. And the Bible gives us these, it tells us the good and the bad of the heroes, right? So that we can learn how we ought to be and to not make the same mistakes. Okay. Anybody else?
No, it's just so mm-hmm. sad when I just think about what, you know, what they did with his coat and going to jail.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was. We'll just read that part real quick there. When they show him the coat, do you recognize this? A wild beast must have devoured him. Verse 34. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. This hurt him very badly, right? Especially since he had played favorites, right? This really hurt him so badly. He says, for I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning. So he just, in his mind, his son was dead, and he would never see him again until he died and passed away as well. And so, interesting how he will see him again in this life. You know, the things that we never realized might come to pass can come to pass. So, yes, Sharla.
Just to go on what Liz just said, too.
Yes.